The MarTech Podcast is a proud member of the I Hear Everything Podcast Network. Looking to launch or scale your podcast? I Hear Everything delivers podcast production, growth, and monetization solutions that transform your words into profit. Ready to give your brand a voice? Then visit IHearEverything.com.
From advertising to software as a service to data.
Across all of our programs and clients, we've seen a 55 to 65% open rate.
Getting brands authentically integrated into content performs better than TV advertising.
Typical lifespan of an article is about 24 to 36 hours.
If we're reaching out to the right person with the right message and a clear call to action, then it's just a matter of timing.
Welcome to the MarTech Podcast, a member of the I Hear Everything Podcast Network. In this podcast, you'll hear the stories of world-class marketers that use technology to drive business results and achieve career success. Here's the host of the MarTech Podcast, Benjamin Shapiro.
Welcome to the MarTech Podcast. I'm Benjamin Shapiro, the executive producer of the MarTech Podcast, and today we've got a special episode for you, which is going to be guest hosted by Juan Mendoza, the author of the MarTech Weekly Newsletter. Juan is a recovering MarTech consultant turned creator who writes an amazing weekly newsletter about the MarTech industry, and I'm thrilled to invite him and some of his friends to take the mic and share their knowledge with you, our loyal MarTech Podcast listeners. All right, here's a special episode of the MarTech Podcast, guest hosted by Juan Mendoza, the author of the MarTech Weekly Newsletter.
Hello, hello, marketeers. My name is Juan Mendoza from the MarTech Weekly Newsletter. And today we're going to discuss ad tech, AI, and the future of marketing. And there is no one better to talk about these topics right now than Rio Longacre, who is the Managing Director of Advertising and Marketing Transformation at Slalom. Slalom is a purpose-led global business and a technology consulting company. Yesterday, Rio Longacre and I talked about how every company is now an ad tech company. And today, we're going to continue this conversation by discussing avoiding the AI swirl. So here is my conversation with Rio Longacre, the Managing Director of Advertising and Marketing Transformation at Slalom. Rio, thank you so much for joining me and coming back for our second conversation.
Good to be here. Last one was a lot of fun, and I'm sure this one will be too.
Oh yeah, well, we're going to talk about AI hype, and wow, what a furious cycle of hype it has been over the past year and a half almost now. Since November 2022, OpenAI kind of opened the Pandora's box, so to speak, and gave us ChatGPT, which was their kind of first really breakthrough consumer product using large language models for text. Since then, there's been billions of dollars invested across the world. There's been new companies launched. There's been incredible growth in this sector and a lot of mistakes along the way as well. Now, I want to ask you, as somebody at the forefront of working with major brands across the world, and I'm assuming they're asking questions about how they use the power of large language models in their own business, maybe you can help us understand what kind of goals these marketers have and what they're doing when they're approaching these types of technologies.
Yeah, they're asking us a lot about it. That's not surprising. I mean, brands come to us as a systems integrator and strategy firm. They usually come to us, can you help solve these problems? And that's been a big problem they've been asking us to solve ever since OpenAI announced ChatGPT. And it obviously got tons of press and it's been widely used, right? I think hundreds of millions of people are now using it. I think those requests have evolved in a positive way. And I'll explain one. So initially when they were coming in, it was, how do we adopt this? And I mean, just to drive me crazy, like we need a Gen AI strategy. I mean, it's a tool, right? Do you need a computer strategy? Do you need like a phone strategy? I usually was kind of ridiculous. And I always respond, yes, for sure you should be using this and you should be identifying areas in your business you can improve, but just like you would use any other tool. So I think that attitude of we've got to adopt this, and the mandates were coming top down. CEOs were saying, we're going to adopt this or else you're all going to be on the streets, right? There's a lot of that. There's this mad rush to adopt it. And that's why I wrote that article about the Gen AI swirl. There's so much of it. There's one agency I was working with, I think half their IT department spent the better part of a year messing around building out these demos. Not a single one ever got commercialized. I mean, it could have done so many other things with that time and energy, right?
Yeah.
So that's why I call it the Gen AI swirl. Gen AI swirl was, we've got to adopt this. We've got to find ways to use it, not doing it in a thoughtful way and creating demos, not really thinking about like, why do we want to use it? What problems are we trying to solve? And that brings us to present day. So I think it's evolving in a positive way where everything now, and by the way, last year, kind of you look at Gen AI aside, right? Last year was more of how do we find internal efficiencies in our company. For most organizations this year, it's how do we drive top line revenue and sales, period. That's what all anyone cares about. So I guess not surprisingly, the GenAI questions are, how can we use GenAI to generate more sales, generate more revenue for organization, which is good. So I think that's positive. They're more focused now. And we're starting to see some use cases for advertising and marketing evolve that really are starting to make a difference.
I think that's a great way to frame this, which is there's sort of two parts to this puzzle. How do we use generative AI to drive efficiency, create better margins, and help productivity? And then the other side is, how do we use this technology for growth, to drive demand, to drive sales, to drive revenue, et cetera? And those two questions are extremely different. Hey, like, that's two different teams and the two different business cases, two different opportunities, right? And I think a lot of marketers get a bit confused where they kind of meld both of those ideas together in some way. And that's where perhaps where you see a lot of this, as you say, right? A lot of teams tinkering with it, playing with it, and then kind of ultimately abandoning it. But I want to get a view from you. Do you think that this technology is as transformative as the media kind of says it is? Do you think it's actually game-changing, career-defining stuff, or is it something else?
I think for people who have specialized in it, it's been career-defining. How many prompt engineers do you see like on their CV profiles now? Quite a few. I think for them, it's probably been good business. And I think for consulting and agencies, it's been something they've been using to go to market. But look, the dirty little secret of my opinion anyway, I mean, take it for what it's worth of Gen AI, I think so far is that it hasn't generated a ton of actual billable work for anybody. A lot of the Gen AI work we're doing is actually change management. How do we adopt Gen AI and do it in the right way? How do we set up a repeatable process for identifying use cases, building out demos, commercializing demos, et cetera? I think that's a lot of the work we're doing rather than actually building out solutions. Now, we're building out some of those. I think it's interesting. I'll give you a couple examples. So one, for example, we're working with a big oil and gas company. They're using Gen AI to translate a bunch of documents that are created by Global, you know, websites, you know, one-page Excel sheets, things like that. So sales and marketing material, they're translating into 10, 15 languages. Now, they still have a human in the loop in each language reviewing the output and editing it before it's published. But it's definitely cutting down on the time, and it's definitely streamlining a process for them. And if I were a translator, just translating technical documents, yeah, I'd probably be worried about my job because of things like that. But they haven't let go of any translators yet. They still have them, and the human is in the loop kind of editing them. So we're seeing things like that that I think are really cool, right? That are having a meaningful commercial impact on companies. This one bank I'm working with, one where they're using Gen AI to pump out creative briefs. No one likes doing this. So they give it to like the newest, youngest person who's like 22 years old, doesn't know what he or she's doing. They fill the damn thing out. It goes back. It's half wrong. As a brand manager, you fill that back. It goes back 10 times. So they cut out a week of time. So I'm seeing some really interesting things with Gen AI that are actually meaningful, that are making a difference. But that's recent. I think the first better part of the year, I didn't see a whole lot. And I saw a lot of hype, but not a lot of like actual substance.
Yeah, and that's the way with Silicon Valley tech, isn't it? We saw the same thing with Web3 and crypto. We've seen the same thing with AR, VR, and the metaverse. Even just look at, for example, how much was invested in metaverse-type technologies, right?
Yeah.
It was unbelievable. And you'd have consultancies like McKinsey say that there's trillions of dollars to be of value forecasted with this particular tech category. They just fizzled out into nothing.
They should be embarrassed by that.
Yeah.
They really should be one. I mean, like, I think this $4 trillion valuation, and they've had a bunch of questionable studies recently, that being one. Web3, NFTs, the number of transactions has fallen by 99% in terms of NFTs being a crash. It was obviously just a pump and dump, right? If you ask me.
And that's the thing. It's like, are we currently in another bubble? We just changed the words crypto and blockchain to AI and generative LLMs and stuff. But what I'm seeing at least is that there's hype and then there's commercial reality. And it depends on who you're talking to.
Opinions are super mixed, you know, like there are some folks that say that, yep, it's completely changed their whole approach to work. They're automating away work that staff used to do. They're making a ton of enhancements and productivity enhancements in their business by doing so. And then you have others that say that this is just a tool. This is just a toy, basically. And finding a space in the middle there is really tough because of how broad it is. I think that what you're doing at Slalom is like trying to nail down what is the commercial opportunity here for marketers and advertisers. How does that actually play out? And being very realistic about it is probably where you're going to drive a lot of value just in navigating this trend. Marketers are going to experiment. Let's just face it. Marketers are always going to experiment with new shiny toys. It's part of their job description. They're going to have to try these things. But knowing when to invest and when to try something is very different. Tinkering around with ChatGPT or another AI tool is fine, but actually putting together a business case and investing is a totally different thing. Maybe you can help us understand that. Where have you seen a success story where marketers have gone from tinkering to business case to an actual successful implementation of a generative AI tool in their marketing practice?
No, it's interesting you bring up the whole hype thing. And I think you look at Gartner hype cycle, right? I know we maybe had our issues with Gartner over the years, right? We can laugh about the Magic Quadrant a few weeks ago, right? But, you know, they do put out some good material. I think the hype cycle is a good one. So we're probably just over the crest of the hype cycle, going to the trough of disillusionment a little bit now. I'm starting to hear some people be a little disillusioned with Gen AI, which I think is fair. After, you know, a year and a half later, like, what have we created? So what is it not doing? Like, I haven't seen any Gen AI creating content out in the wild that's being published without people reviewing it that hasn't created a huge black eye for the organization doing it. Not a single one. And I don't know if I will anytime soon. And I think any organization that tries to use it for that is just foolish, my opinion. But I've seen some great use cases streamline content production significantly. Should you really have to send a banner out to a creative team or an agency, wait a week to get it back and pay $1,000? Probably not. So can you have a Gen AI tool resize a banner for you? Now have a designer review it, of course. We're seeing that, and that's speeding things up. It's cutting costs. Now, that whole hysteria about all these jobs are going to be lost. Will some jobs be lost? For sure. But what we're seeing, for example, is the people being most impacted by this are not the high performers. It barely makes a difference for them. The contact center. A lot of the initial use cases are contact center, right? You know, it's a chatbot, right? You know, we've had ML-based chatbots for years, but Gen AI, I think, has made them significantly better, more interactive, and it's been a game changer. It's brought them up several generations immediately. So we're finding that it is eliminating many conversations. Now, will that eliminate contact center jobs? Probably, but these are like the tier one, like the lowest, easiest to solve. You probably shouldn't have people handling it anyway, but like the tier two, tier three, people are still handling those. There's a great case study from a Swedish financial firm. I think they said, you know, millions of conversations are being handled in like first call resolution. These chatbots are handling them immediately, much quicker and more efficiently than humans actually, because these were, again, very simple things that if you had the right information available, you could handle. So I think we're seeing some really interesting things. Another anecdote from Contact Center, we're finding that a really inexperienced contact center person, because you can have the Gen AI, the bot, rip through all of your assets really quickly and create a C360 view of a customer very quickly and present it to the agent, we're finding they can be up to speed and be as proficient as someone who's been there several months within just a few days. So it really is an accelerator, making them more efficient. Yeah, it will impact some job, but end of the day, I think it's getting the lower value work and the higher value stuff still done by people, but they're armed with AI tools to make their jobs easier.
Time for a one-minute break to hear from our presenting sponsor, Mutinex. In 1919, John Wanamaker said, "Half the money I spend on advertising is wasted. I just don't know which half." Well, the advertising landscape has changed since then, and instead of reaching your audience on two channels, you're probably reaching them on 20. Turns out John didn't know how easy he had it. But that doesn't mean that you should give up on striving towards marketing effectiveness. No matter how complex your marketing strategy is, Mutinex Growth OX is the market mix modeling platform that measures the impact of marketing on your bottom line. Mutinex's market mix modeling platform calibrates your insights against the latest market conditions so you can make media and marketing investment decisions confidently and quickly. Ready to take your team from "I think" to "I know"? Then join brands like Samsung, ING, and Asahi who make better marketing decisions with Mutinex. Mutinex Growth OX, your best decision starts here. To learn more about Mutinex, go to mutinex.co. That's mutinex.co. Okay, here's the rest of today's interview. A special thanks to our presenting sponsor, Mutinex. Ready to take your team from "I think" to "I know"? Then join brands like Samsung, ING, and Asahi who make better marketing decisions with Mutinex. Mutinex Growth OX, the marketing mix modeling platform that makes measuring ROI fast, easy, and cost-effective. Request a demo at mutinex.co. That's mutinex.co.
So sounds like from what you've experienced that there's actually been a lot of really interesting ideas and use cases that could lead to some significant value. I think the big risk and the big challenge with this stuff is, and it's always going to be there, is how much do you trust the black box? We're so used to trusting other humans to do work and to have that accountability to create campaigns and do creative and analyze data and to come to conclusions. We trust each other people to do that work in a business, but how much do we actually trust an AI to do that? Which I think is much more of a philosophical question than a practical one. It's like, you know, do you really want, you know, an AI system putting content out into the wild without no human oversight? Of course not. But it's also a bottleneck for iterations. It's also a bottleneck for a speed to market as well. Having a human eye over things, it's also a cost center. especially if you want to scale things up. It's a very hard question to answer, how much you actually trust the black box.
I guess my answer to that would be, because brands ask me all the time, oh, we want to create this content with Gen AI and we want to publish it in the wild. Like, and I always say, like, if a human created this, would you want it reviewed by someone? And they ask, oh, of course we would. Yeah, we'd have a copyright. I said, well, why would you have a machine create it and not proof it, right? Or fact check it. You need the same oversight and redundancies and fail safes for content created by machines as you do for people, in my opinion, at least now. Maybe that'll change in the future. Maybe we could have machines proofing machines, but we're not there yet. And I don't know if we will be anytime soon. So I think that's interesting. Another thing to be aware of for content, you know, a lot of people don't realize this, is that if you're using, you have to, I mean, these large language models take a crapload of content to train, and the content has to come from somewhere. Historically, where's it been coming from? Where they've been setting these models loose on the web, they've been ripping through the web and taking all this copyrighted content and training themselves. And people are waking up. There's the New York Times lawsuit now. If you want to use content to train a large language model, you have to pay for it. So I think, I mean, if you look back to our last conversation on the previous one, on the data monetization, where I think a lot of organizations are sitting on data, realizing this is another way we can monetize data. We can actually use it, can lease it out to these large language models to train them. I think that's very interesting and a revenue stream that we're seeing. But you think about it, if a large language model you're training is using copyrighted material, if you're creating content on that, you could potentially be sued for copyright infringement. I think a lot of people don't realize that. So you really have to be careful of the content you're creating.
That's a massive point here, is that because the technology is so new, we're still figuring out the legal framework for how to use it. And again, like enterprises, let's face it here, they're not startups. They can't break the law, you know, or they can't risk breaking the law, even if it's not clear just yet. So that whole legal aspect is definitely a showstopper. And that's one of the things, is that for a marketing team, yes, learning these tools, understanding how they work is important, but it's probably just as important for the legal team to learn it as well. Because they're the ones approving campaigns. They're the ones that are reviewing the methodologies for things and accountable for any legal exposure business may have. And it sounds a bit boring and it sounds a bit, oh, you know, not that. But I think really, if any business wants to make this successful, they need their legal team to understand the existing position, the existing law that applies to these tools, whether it be trademark or IP protections, or even the use of the technology and its liability when it does something for you as well. You don't just want, in a business position, they probably just want a bunch of people just using ChatGPT, loading up data from the business to use these very open, very easy to use tools. Last thing you want is that happening without any sort of governance or oversight. And it doesn't sound sexy at all, but it is a reality of business, is that the legal exposure, it is a massive problem. And the AI companies are facing it now with several class action lawsuits and the New York Times suit, as you mentioned, Rio. But also brands have just as much liability there as well.
100%. And one thing to consider too is in the US, at least any content created by Gen AI cannot be copyrighted. So not only are you liable for violating any copyright infringements if you train on the wrong content, but anything you create, you can't then go to and say, hey, we want to have a copyright on this content. So it is interesting. You could do that with something an artist creates, right? Or if you hire a designer, they could do that, but not with Gen AI currently. And I think that is settled as of now in the US, unless there's new legislation, obviously, that I think is interesting. And another thing on compliance too, is like some of the companies that offer like image generators now are starting to offer indemnification as part of their package. That's something anyone who's looking into it should probably consider.
There are some fantastic resources out there. It's definitely something to think through when it comes to using these tools yourself. It's not just the shiny object or playing around with ChatGPT. It's the business case. It's how do you commercialize it and create value for your business, and also the legal and the risk exposure that's part of it as well. All the fun stuff when it comes to bringing new tech into the business, isn't it?
I have a question for you, if you don't mind. This is interesting. So I got asked this by a client the other day, and I answered it the best way I thought, but I'm wondering what you think as a MarTech expert. I was asked by a client, okay, so we're implementing Gen AI. I think they were using actually ChatGPT, a version of it, to create content. And a lot of the content was based on really detailed customer data. So the client said to me, she said, well, if we're doing this, do we really need a CDP anymore? Can't we just set this thing, tell it what we want the output to look like, which should be, let's say, a profile, and just set it loose in all our content and create these bespoke profiles when we need them to activate them? Do we not need a CDP anymore? And I actually thought about it. And I said, I actually think you do need a CDP. And she also said, do we need a DAM? So I said, actually, I think you need both, because I actually think having your content organized becomes more important, because you have to tell it where to go and you have to make sure it's trained on the, because garbage in, garbage out. So my response is you probably need both more, but I don't know if you agree or disagree.
I think you definitely need both, because there is this joke in the MarTech industry that I'm sure you've seen, the Scott Brinker, Franz Remus, where MarTech landscape, it's like the 14,000 apps in one page. Yep. Early last year, Scott Brinker and I were kind of joking around. It's like, oh, you can just kind of slap a OpenAI logo over all of that. It's all just AI. It's basically everything's prompt-based. It's like, okay, you can use an AI and it basically runs your entire data or operations practice, including content. And then you can just ask it to do things for you and it'll just do it. Instead of having these bespoke interfaces and apps that you're using for different things, like a CDP or a DAM or other sort of technologies, email marketing platforms and stuff, you just go, hey, pull us up the latest contacts. We want to create a segment based on this. Cool. And then go send an email, right? And you're starting to see that with tools like Kognitiv and SAS. They have launched these AI tools where you can kind of build a marketing campaign from scratch just by asking the AI platform to do it. But again, there's a generational shift here, right? Like not everyone will want to work on a prompt text-based because you lose a lot of context. People will want to work in interfaces and they will want to work in technology that basically allows them to have a lot more control and visibility of what's actually happening from an operational standpoint. So I'd say that the concept of deleting your DAM and deleting your CDP in favor of just a single AI tool is maybe the next generation down. But as humans, we're just so used to interfaces for our business and being able to have that visibility over the tools we use. So that's kind of my answer to the question. I think a lot of the platforms are here to stay. But what I'm kind of seeing, as I mentioned, SAS and Kognitiv is kind of very interesting, is that they're trying to bring some of this capability into the interface to make it usable for marketers. So I think that's probably the right approach.
Interesting. It's funny you mentioned prompt engineering as well. I posted the other day, prompt engineering is not engineering. I think it gained me some detractors posting that. But my opinion, besides prompt engineering really not being engineering, I think prompt engineering, I don't know if it'll go away, but I think that AI tools will evolve just as the way like we've gone from DOS to Windows and iOS in better ways that are more in tune to the way people like to interact with things. I think that Gen AI tools will evolve and, you know, maybe we go to the Star Trek, hey, computer, create this for me. I think we will go towards something like that, that actually works with people the way they want to work. It doesn't force us to conform to their ways of working. So I think we're probably looking at a future where prompts, the way we look at them today, don't exist anymore. And we use AI as more of a matter of fact part of our lives. Maybe we'll have to adjust a little bit, but I think in the future state, it won't look the way it does today.
I think that's a great way of thinking about it, is that iterations are slow. The technology comes, but then actually absorbing of that technology into business practices takes time. And it does go back to our previous question about how much do you trust the black box? And to increasingly use AI tools means that you're increasingly automating human decisions. So that's just the reality of it. And perhaps that's a great way to end on that question, is how much do you trust the black box and how much do you integrate it with your existing MarTech stack? It's a wonderful one. But if you do have questions from Rio, you can reach out to him directly and have a conversation, because he has a wealth of insight on how to operationalize AI and how to actually navigate the realities of enterprise business when it comes to using new technologies. So this wraps up our final episode of the MarTech podcast with Rio Longacre. So he is the Managing Director of Advertising and Marketing Transformation at Slalom. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insights. It has been very, very interesting. If you'd like to get in touch with Rio and ask more questions about our topics, you can find a link to his LinkedIn profile in our show notes. You can also contact him on Twitter, where his handle is Rio Longacre, one word. Or you can visit his company website at slalom.com. Rio, thank you so much again for sharing your insights.
Thanks, Ron. It's really been a pleasure.
Okay, that wraps up this episode of the MarTech Podcast. Thanks to our guest host, Juan Mendoza, the author of the MarTech Weekly Newsletter. If you'd like to get in touch with Juan, you could find a link to his LinkedIn profile in our show notes, or you can contact him on Twitter. His handle is Juan Mendoza, but it's spelled crazy pants. It's JU4NMEND0Z4. Or it's a little easier to just visit his company's website, which is themartechweekly.com. Just one more link in our show notes I'd like to tell you about. If you didn't have a chance to take notes while you were listening to this podcast, head over to martechpod.com, where we have summaries of all of our episodes and contact information for our guests. You can also subscribe to our weekly newsletters, and you can even send us your topic suggestions or your marketing questions, which we'll answer live on our show. Of course, you can always reach out on social media. Our handle is MarTechPod, MARTECHPOD, on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, or you can contact me directly. My handle is Ben J. Schaap, BenJShap. And if you haven't subscribed yet and you want a daily stream of marketing and technology knowledge in your podcast feed, we're going to publish an episode every day this year. So hit the subscribe button in your podcast app, and we'll be back in your feed tomorrow morning. All right, that's it for today. But until next time, my advice is to just focus on keeping your customers happy.
Thanks for listening to the MarTech Podcast, an I Hear Everything production. Looking to launch or scale a podcast like this one for your brand? Then visit iHearEverything.com.